Hello, and welcome to a special program on the response to the COVID-19 pandemic in Charlottesville. I'm Sean Tubbs, and I've spent the last 3 weeks documenting the local and state response to an ongoing public health and economic crisis. I'm the creator of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and a journalist who seeks to help you understand what's happening in the community. In normal times, that means poring through policy documents to help you make sense of what your local government is up to. But these are not normal times. This program provides an overview of how we got to where we are right now on April 5th and is an edited version of the 15 episodes I produced so far. I'm sort of making it up as I go along, so I don't even know how to tell you how to download the podcast. But what's important is the right now, and this program is intended to get you acquainted with some of the voices of the people who are helping us to get through this situation, which is changing all of our lives. Now, let's go back to 3 weeks ago today and hear a little bit of where we were then. Today's installment features the voices of three elected officials, recorded on this day, Sunday, March 15th, 2020. Governor Ralph Northam.
I want Virginians to understand we are taking this seriously, and so should they.
Charlottesville Mayor Nakia Walker.
Just know that I see everyone trying their best to figure out, like, how do we get through this?
57th District Delegate Sally Hudson.
Please take seriously the concerns about social distancing. It's not just about keeping yourself healthy, especially if you're a young person. It's about reducing the transmission between people in our community.
Governor Ralph Northam held a press conference on Sunday afternoon to give an update on Virginia's pandemic response.
What we are trying to achieve here is the kind of social distancing that experts tell us is critical to stopping the spread of the virus. We all want to end this pandemic. And everything we hear from the experts tells us that slowing its spread is critical to keeping more Virginians healthy and ensuring what we do does not overload our healthcare system.
As I record this, one issue is how the Virginia Department of Health is coming up with the figures for confirmed cases. On Sunday, the number edged up to 45 out of 408 official tests. That number is up from 41 from the day before, when Northam had confirmed the first death from COVID-19. The person overseeing the state's response to the pandemic is Dr. Norm Oliver, the Virginia Health Commissioner. He said the number of cases will be increasing.
When we identify a case, we do what we call contact investigation, and we are looking into hundreds of contacts of these cases to trace down any new cases and to isolate them when we find them.
Next up, Mayor Nakia Walker held a Facebook Live meeting.
But it's serious that you don't compromise other people's health. So I'm willing to do what I need to do, and I need people around me to do the same thing. And
now in her second term as mayor, Walker has used this service as a way to talk directly to constituents. On Sunday afternoon, she sounded a reassuring tone as she sought to provide good advice to the dozens of people watching.
So you'll need to talk to your family, and you'll need to tell them, like, so this is what I'm reading. And don't give them 3,000 facts at once. Just give them a few. So they say people should at least be 6 feet apart. This is why they're trying to flatten some curve. You know, the curve means the number of people infected, you know, and this is what could potentially happen.
But she also had the opportunity to take questions from the audience.
Can the city health department do anything about the parties at the corner? I'll write that down.
As we wonder about the fallout from a total shutdown of our society, opportunities to ask our elected officials questions is more important than ever. Here's another one.
Elizabeth wants to know, while many utility shutoffs have been halted, mobile service remains vulnerable at this crucial time. Can mobile phone service shutoffs be halted? Unfortunately, right now, as I understand it, I think we are currently relying on the kindness of corporations to halt those shutoffs. So if you've seen Dominion Power, for example, has agreed to halt this continuation of service. We have seen Comcast as an internet provider offer a little bit more grace for customers, though not customers that are currently already behind on their bills. Right now, we do not have a clear corporate or consumer protection structure in place to be able to handle mobile service. That's the kind of thing that would have to come from the executives, from our attorney general, and from our governor.
Here's the thing. It's really important that you guys get as much information as you possibly can about the things that are going on. I'm going to try to help synthesize as much information as I can so that we can all figure out what happens next. There's going to be a lot of confusion. There can also be a lot of calm if we can just remember that we're all smart, we can all figure this out, as long as we all have access to the primary materials. Anyway, I encourage you in the days ahead to seek out whatever live streams you can from your local and state government and ask as many questions as you can.
The mics are live right now.
On March 16th, 2020, the Charlottesville City Council held a historic meeting at which most of the public participants were at home. As part of our community's response to the COVID-19 global pandemic,
the meeting will be starting in just a few minutes.
4 out of the 5 councilors were present in city council chambers, as were most of the city's senior staff. At a time when officials are pleading with people to stay at home, council moved forward with business, though none of it was as usual.
We have about 21 people on the webinar. We're about to turn the meeting over to our mayor, Nakia Walker, and she will get us underway.
That's Brian Wheeler, the city's communications director, as he tells those 21 people that the meeting is about to get started. Wheeler started Charlottesville Tomorrow back in 2005 and hired me, Sean Tubbs, as his first employee back in 2007. I'm producing a series of podcasts about local responses to the COVID-19 pandemic, with this second episode dedicated to serving as a recap of sorts for part of this meeting. It's not the whole thing, but hopefully it would help you understand a little more about how local government in Charlottesville and Albemarle County is responding to this crisis. Here's Mayor Nakia Walker, who we heard yesterday in a more informal setting on Facebook Live.
All right, good evening. I call this meeting to order.
And because Vice Mayor Sina McGill was not there in person, City Attorney John Blair had to explain how she could legally be allowed to electronically participate in the meeting.
Vice Mayor McGill, are you on the line?
I am.
Is your electronic participation tonight due to a medical condition?
I believe so.
And are you currently at your residence in the city of Charlottesville, Virginia?
I am.
Okay. If I could have a motion from a counselor to allow Ms. McGill to participate via electronically.
So moved.
In the days and weeks to come, local government is going to have to figure out how to conduct business, and it may mean more resolutions like this. With the reality of our society's shift to social distancing, it's important for those of us not in government to learn some of these rules. This council meeting is the first of many that may come with this disclaimer.
So we're acknowledging that we're deviating from our standard council meeting procedures for public participation. We do have a webinar.
Some parts of the meeting were similar to before. The Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
The roll call.
Mr. Payne.
Here.
Mr. Snook.
Here.
Ms. Walker.
Present.
Ms. McGill.
Here.
Ms. Hill.
Here.
The approval of the final agenda.
As it's been printed here, I move its approval.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All of the usual traffic.
All right, any announcements?
Except some announcements were a little more unusual. Here's City Councilor Heather Hill.
Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the Commissioner of Revenue, Treasurer, and Utility Billing will all be closed to walk-in traffic until April 1st.
Mayor Walker had a plug for one of many local community efforts that are coming together to support people in need.
Local journalists Jordy Yeager and Margot Balka, on behalf of Willow Tree, have been working with community organizers, area nonprofits, and others to set up a new centralized website called Support Seaville. The site is a one-stop hub for people to find and navigate the many ways, big and small, that people can help the community members by donating money, their time, and other supplies to those most impacted and most in need.
through the on-the-ground resources already doing the work. Support Seaville is also a one-stop site that collects all the different ways people can request local funding and help with their day-to-day as well as other supplies. The site address is supportseaville.com.
That's supportseaville.com. In case you missed it, supportseaville.com. City Manager Dr. Teron Richardson also addressed the current crisis and gave an important update.
Earlier today, the Virginia Department of Health's Thomas Jefferson Health District announced that a resident of the city of Charlottesville had tested positive for the 2019 coronavirus, COVID-19. This marks the first case in the Thomas Jefferson Health District. In an effort to contain and mitigate the coronavirus, the city of Charlottesville will begin operations on tomorrow, Tuesday, March 17, 2020, with only essential personnel reporting to work. We ask that all in-person transactions be curtailed unless absolutely necessary.
But what about council meetings, where the public gets a chance to ask questions? For tonight's meeting, at least, up to 8 members of the public were allowed in to speak in public comment. With many businesses closing to comply with the shutdown, one woman asked for tax relief now.
All right. Elena Magone.
Mayor Walker, members of council, my name is Elena Mangione.
Mangione.
Okay. Sorry to correct you.
No, I need to know how to say it.
I am the owner of Mangione's on Main, located on West Main Street. I stand before you this evening as an independent restaurateur in the city of Charlottesville, struggling to survive during this challenging time. Those of us that will be most affected from a financial standpoint are in the hospitality industry. Local restaurateurs are taking extreme precautions by shutting their doors to in-house dining or closing altogether. Some of our restaurants in the community may never be able to recover. I, along with other independent businesses, are asking for an immediate relief in meals tax forgiveness for February and March, which is coming due this week for February.
On the surface, that may sound like a reasonable claim, but municipal governments in Virginia are complex, and the answers are not always that simple. I personally am staying at home to help prevent spreading a virus that may or may not be on me and in me already. As I record this installment, the script is already somewhat out of date. The audio here is from March 17th, 2020, and I'm recording this on the morning of March 18th, waiting for more information. Just before noon on March 17th, Virginians got an update from Governor Ralph Northam, who urged everyone to continue taking this crisis seriously.
As of today, Virginia has 67 cases and, unfortunately, 2 deaths. Our strategy must focus on mitigating and slowing down the spread of this virus so that our medical system has more time to prepare for the increased pressure that this will put on it.
Northam announced further restrictions, such as a recommendation that restaurants have no more than 10 people in them at once. The idea is to flatten the curve, a phrase that has become commonplace so quickly, as has social distancing. What other terms might we know in the weeks ahead? We can worry about that later. Governor Northam is right on in what he's about to say.
Every single one of us has a personal responsibility in this situation. Every one of us has a role in being part of the solution. For example, that means do not go to St. Patrick's Day parties tonight. If you do, you are literally putting others at risk.
Holding government meetings in public is also considered a risk, and the Centers for Disease Control has issued guidelines that state that no more than 10 people should be gathering in one place at the same time. The idea is to limit the number of contacts that could lead to additional cases that have to be tracked by epidemiologists. Northam also said that Virginia is now asking people over the age of 65 to self-quarantine because mortality rates are higher in that demographic. It's early days still, but the planning process for relief has begun.
Because Virginia and the federal government have declared states of emergency, unemployment funds are available through the Virginia Employment Commission to help mitigate the impact on employees of these businesses as well as on the businesses themselves.
For instance, that means a waiver of a one-week period before affected people can begin to collect benefits. Already, we're starting to see a lot of announcements suspending evictions, utility payments, and more. Let's keep track of the news and pay attention to how we can all help each other. These are the things that you as the public need to be thinking about as this pandemic continues. Things are going to change every day. On March 17th, the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors held their first meeting in the COVID-19 era, with most of the seats in Lane Auditorium covered with trash bags to prevent people from sitting in them. Right now, it's more important to hear about the health issues. And let's hear from Dr. Denise Bonds, the director of the Thomas Jefferson Health District.
So thank you for having me today. I'm delighted to see the plastic bags on the chairs and the so few people, keeping with both the president's and the governor's request to keep our meeting size down. So thank you.
I want to leave one discussion in here intact about social distancing to remind you why you need to keep distance for now. America has been through this before, back in 1918 with the Spanish flu pandemic. And Dr. Bonds brought in a slide to demonstrate how quick action on social distancing can work.
I just brought this one slide, and I'll walk you through it. And this is from the Washington Post, but they shamelessly stole it from this research article that was published in 2007. That looked at the impact of non-pharmacal interventions on the 1918 flu death. And what you see are two curves, one for Philadelphia and one for St. Louis. And the first dot on each of those curves indicates when the first case of the Spanish flu was detected in that particular city. So you can see in Philadelphia it was detected in early September. And then the second dot on the curve line is when they put into effect many social distancing, things like closing theaters, closing churches, asking people to stay home, closing restaurants and bars, all of the things that we're doing right now. And you can see that Philadelphia waited about 2 weeks before they implemented their social distancing, and they had a huge spike in the number of cases of the 1918 flu. St. Louis, on the other hand, had their first case October 5th, and 2 days later, they had locked that city down. Mm-hmm. And what you see is a dramatically different curve here. And so I have these posted all over the health department now because the motto is, be like St. Louis.
Will it work? We don't know yet, just like we don't know a lot of things yet. What's important is to pay attention and figure out how each of us can help others around us. Supervisors had a lot of questions about tests.
What is the criteria right now in this area for getting the test? What I'm hearing is that they're, you know, been traveling, have a fever, have a cough, have symptoms, but they're told unless they have had contact with an individual that's tested positive, they can't get tested. So could you just explain the current? It might change tomorrow or the next day.
Right. So it has changed, like, most days. Okay. We have very limited numbers of tests. So testing is the biggest bottleneck. We have not solved the testing problem, and we keep running up into shortages. This week it was a call for anybody have swabs to do the test because they were running out of swabs to do this. And you have to remember that our supply chain is global, and we get many of the things that we need from overseas, and some places are also having their own outbreak, and so obviously it's taking a while to catch up to that. And so I know people are frustrated, and I know they're anxious, and I know they're scared. And our best advice is that if you feel like you have traveled or been to a high-exposure area, to just stay home. Just do that 14 days of isolation. If you begin to have symptoms, contact your doctor.
Bond said another issue is that many medical professionals do not have protective gear, appropriate masks and face shields. Supervisor Ann Malik said people should be patient and wait before rushing out to get a test.
People want a test so that they know if they have to change their life or not.
People have to change their life now.
We have to make them forget about that and say everybody, no matter whether you're 2 or 102, has got to take this seriously, because if people don't, no matter how many tests you get, it's not going to make any difference.
So you bring up a really great point. A negative test does not mean that you will never get this disease.
Even you didn't have it today, right?
It just means that at the moment that you were tested, you didn't have a burden big enough to be picked up by that particular test.
You're listening to a recap of the response to the COVID-19 pandemic in Virginia and Charlottesville. We'll be back with more after this break.
We live in a data-driven society, and we have been for years. And when something like a global pandemic hits, we need information in order to help come to terms with unexpected change. Now, in case you have not heard the show from the beginning, the first episode ended with musician Michael Klemm. We'll conclude this episode with more from him, but for now, he shared this observation today in a Facebook Live show.
I don't know about you guys, I've had an interesting week. A week ago, I was saying to my parents, I was saying to some other folks, I think it was on Wednesday, just about a week ago, that this is nothing, this is going to blow over, our nation doesn't have the attention span for something like this, they're going to go on to some other news article or some celebrity's wrongdoing. My advice to you is never listen to me. I don't listen to any of my predictions. I know nothing. This is unlike anything we have experienced.
So much has happened so quickly, and we're still in the early days of a crisis that will affect us all, even if not all of us contract COVID-19. We don't have all of the answers yet, but some of the voices you'll hear in this installment have some encouraging things to say.
One day at a time, you know, control what you can control, and, you know, do the best you can for now.
We all have a responsibility to one another. Every single one of us must take these actions to take care of one another.
Here's Lillian Peek, the state epidemiologist.
So as of today in Virginia, we do have 94 cases of COVID-19. There have been 19 hospitalizations and 2 deaths.
The number of total cases is up from 1 on March 7th, the first day a case was confirmed in Virginia. There were 11 confirmed cases on March 11th, the day that the University of Virginia announced that they would go online. The 94 cases reported by the Virginia Department of Health at noon on March 19th does not reflect the 3 additional cases of COVID-19 known to be in the Charlottesville area. That information was released by the Thomas Jefferson Health District earlier, before the VDH announcement of March 19th's numbers. Now, COVID-19 is incredibly infectious at a time when people carrying it don't seem to have any symptoms.
We have at this point distinct clusters in a few geographic areas in the state, and so we are at a level where we're seeing local transmission in Virginia.
The numbers from the Virginia Department of Health are only based on the number of people who have been tested. As of March 19th, that number of 94 is based on a figure of 1,093 people who have been tested. The capacity of Virginia to test has been limited. If you listen to episode 4 of this show, you got a glimpse into some of the tough budget considerations that Albemarle County is facing as the economic picture continues a dramatic change. Let's remember that the stock market has fallen quite far, but more importantly, many people are now out of work due to the ongoing public health crisis. There's a lot of uncertainty. Here's Virginia's finance secretary, Aubrey Lane.
We certainly do recognize this is going to have a financial impact both on our economy, our citizens, and certainly our state budget. And anyone that would tell you that they know exactly where this is going to end up is just not being credible, because it's a fluid situation. Things are changing rapidly.
Now, let's hit pause in the press conference for a quick second. Remember a few days ago on Monday when City Council took public comment and one restaurant owner got up to ask for tax relief? By Monday, most restaurants were closed to help increase the chances of infection from growing. We've got to salute them for doing that work, even knowing it's going to mean a real big economic hit. On Thursday morning, Charlottesville announced they would suspend tax collections for the time being. They'll also waive past due penalties and interest until May 31st. That includes meals taxes, but businesses still have to submit returns, and there are limitations. Here's Commissioner of Revenue Todd Divers in an interview this morning.
The city and state code give the commissioner and the treasurer some authority to make a fact-based determination about whether penalty and interest is justified. you know, I think it's generally on a case-by-case basis, but I think in consulting with the city attorney, you know, we think that this qualifies and we're comfortable doing this.
Commissioner Divers stresses that this is not tax forgiveness.
We do not have the authority to do that. You know, I think a lot of people think we do, but we really don't. Those taxes are collected in trust, you know, by the merchants, and they have to be remitted to the city. If they don't get remitted, there are, you know, pretty big consequences for that.
Divers said he knows the people are having a tough time. My observation is that we're still in the early days of a financial crisis that's being caused by the COVID-19 situation. I urge people to continue to look to the state government. Divers agrees.
You know, local governments, they have a limited number of tools in the toolbox that they can use in situations like this. You know, we can do things like what we're announcing today.
Governor Northam.
I want to reiterate the need for every single one of us to take social distancing measures to slow the spread of this virus. There is evidence of community transmission in the northern and central regions of the state and in the peninsula. Infectious diseases do not respect boundaries. All people within these areas should remain vigilant. We expect that community transmission will expand to other areas of the Commonwealth in time. That is why all Virginians need to practice individual prevention and control measures. Our health is in your hands. Know the signs and symptoms. If you're sick enough to seek testing, you're sick enough to stay home for any reason other than to get medical care.
Just remember that number of 94. That's the number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 as of noon on March 19th, 2020. The goal is to keep that number as low as possible for as long as possible to allow our medical facilities to develop the resources to ensure that they can handle with the caseloads that are going to come their way. Pay attention. Take this seriously. As this episode goes out, it's the morning of March 21st, 2020. The number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Virginia rose to 114 yesterday. That number does not reflect new cases in the Thomas Jefferson Health District. But this episode contains the words of state officials from a press conference on March 20th.
The more we can slow this down, the better the chances that our hospitals can meet the needs of every patient.
Another day in this long drawn out COVID-19 crisis. This crisis we have is just getting started, and now more than ever, I feel the need to document what I can and try to help inform you in the meantime. At his daily 11 a.m. briefing on March 20th, Governor Northam reminded Virginians that the police have the authority to enforce the emergency rule that no more than 10 people should be in a business.
We're hearing reports of some businesses being noncompliant. Our localities have the authority to enforce the 10-person limit at restaurants, fitness centers, and theaters, and I fully expect them to use it when needed.
Northam thanked people who have voluntarily complied with the emergency rules. Those who don't are part of a growing problem and are not helping prevent community spread. But he also acknowledged the toll that compliance is having on mental health.
This virus, this pandemic, is affecting everyone's lives. It is forcing changes in people's routines, and for many people, it is affecting their jobs and their income. We are doing everything that we can to help people.
This is a scary and stressful time for everyone. Northam said that can make existing health conditions worse.
But I know that this is hard on people's morale. It is very, very stressful. It is scary. We are all experiencing big, unwanted changes, and we don't know how long this will all last.
Another day, another set of numbers. By the time you hear this, these will be out of date. But in a lot of ways, this podcast is an archive of things as they happen. So here they are for March 20th. And here's Norm Oliver, Virginia's health commissioner.
So the United States as a whole now has more than 13,000 cases of COVID-19 and some 196 deaths. Here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, our current count is 114 cases. We have about another 35 tests that will be in process during the day today, so the case count will go up.
There will be plenty of time to keep tracking the numbers, and many people are watching them vigilantly, asking questions. I'm doing this podcast to capture the words as much as I can. Here's Denise Toney. She's the director of the state lab, which is known as the Division of Consolidated Laboratory Services.
The state lab, since the beginning of the outbreak, has been actively training our workforce and additional individuals within our workforce to perform the tests that needs to be done in order to expand our capability and capacity to ramp up and perform more tests. So at the present time, I do not feel that staffing or laboratory personnel is a rate-limiting factor.
A medical worker friend of mine, a veteran of wars in both Iraq and Afghanistan, told me something sobering today. He said, "This is a Dunkirk moment for humanity, and the nurses, doctors, housekeepers, EMTs, respiratory therapists, they're the ones in the boats." Today I've seen stories of so many people sewing makeshift masks in order to help, in order to fill the gaps that have been left by the supply chains. This really brought home to me the magnitude of what we're about to go through. According to a model put together by a group called COVID Act Now, if Virginia doesn't take stricter action to contain person-to-person transmission by March 25th, state hospitals will be overwhelmed by April 8th. Their model predicts that there will be a need for 180,000 hospitalizations by April 24th if a full lockdown does not go into effect. I urge you to take a look at this website. It's in the show notes for this podcast. Even if additional beds come online, it won't be enough. Now, we're not there yet, but there's still time to take action. But let's hear where Virginia officials were today, on March 21st. Today, the Virginia Department of Health announced that there were 152 confirmed cases of COVID-19, 25 hospitalizations, and 2 deaths. But in reality, the number of infections is likely much higher and will continue to grow as more testing capacity comes online. Northam did say that screening of doctors and nurses has become a priority for those who should get tested.
Today, we're announcing that our testing criteria will give additional priority to medical professionals who have had contact with or cared for someone who has COVID-19 and have developed any symptoms.
One of the issues that has come up in these early days of the COVID-19 pandemic in Virginia has been confusion over the number of testing kits that are out there. In order to help spread the contagion, there is a protocol in place to determine who gets tested.
We're also easing some of the criteria for folks in nursing homes and long-term care facilities to get tested.
Before the press conference, several physicians in the Charlottesville area sent an open letter to Northam calling on the state government to provide more masks, testing kits, and other important gear. Northam responded,
"We also are working to get more of the supplies, the masks and gowns that our frontline healthcare providers need. A shipment of PPEs, personal protective equipment, was distributed to providers yesterday."
And that's something we're going to have to follow up on in the days to come as we wait for more hospitalizations. Here's more from Dan Carey, Virginia's Secretary of Health and Human Services, as he explained the situation as of March 21st.
I think first and foremost, we're distributing what we get from the national stockpile. I think also, whether it's a private practice doctor's or provider's office or our health systems, they are also using all of their supply chains to make sure we have as much PPE as our providers need. Critically important.
It is beyond my scope and ability to track what happens at the federal level, but there are serious questions about why the federal response has been so poor. But our focus is Virginia and Charlottesville. In this shifting world of change, a new routine is emerging for me as I wait for Governor Ralph Northam each day to take the stage for his daily press briefing. One by one, the members of the state's response team walks across the stage, keeping their distance from each other the way we're supposed to right now.
Well, good morning. It is 11 o'clock a.m. on a Sunday, a time when many Virginians would ordinarily be sitting in church pews.
Of course, church services at the moment would be in violation of the 10-person limit for public gatherings as our world adjusts to this temporary new normal. This is the second Sunday since Virginia went into a state of emergency to help slow the spread of COVID-19.
I greatly appreciate and I urge our faith communities to use creative ways to connect while maintaining social distance.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to our Sunday morning worship service on March 22nd online.
That's Gary Heaton, senior pastor at First United Methodist Church in Charlottesville. He's also a member of the city's planning commission. Gary takes a moment to instruct viewers how to take advantage of the comment buttons on Facebook Live.
There's going to be opportunities for you to pray out loud, for you to sing, for you to respond in prayer. So when we prompt you with what to do, it may seem a little awkward, but go ahead and try speaking out loud and bring the sense of worship and the Holy Spirit from this place to where you are.
And as I said, now my daily routine centers around getting the daily briefing from Governor Northam. He began today by releasing the latest numbers from the Virginia Department of Health.
Since yesterday, 67 more people in Virginia have tested positive for COVID-19. And I'm sorry to report we have had our third death, a man in Fairfax who was in his 60s.
Today's official number of 219 confirmed cases is based on 3,337 people whose tests have been certified by the Virginia Department of Health.
This virus continues to spread. We talk about flattening the curve, but make no mistake, we are still in the early stages of that curve rising. How high and how quickly those numbers rise is up to you and me and every single Virginian.
Northam said Virginians need to prepare for this crisis to last for a while.
Months, not weeks. We need to begin adjusting to that reality. But the sooner we all adopt these new ways of living, the sooner we will all get through this.
How are y'all doing?
The same tools being used by churches to reach parishioners are what local officials can use to speak with their constituents.
Hi, Jackie. Hi, Michelle. Hi, JoJo. Hi, Olivia.
Charlottesville Mayor Nakia Walker returned to Facebook Live on Sunday afternoon to give her perspective and encourage people to be safe and smart.
And I just wanted to connect. I don't really have any updates that are not in the news. And so we're trying to, city manager and, staff, they're trying to get information out as quickly as possible. Things are changing rapidly. And you can see the coming together of other community like supportseville.com and all the citizens and staff members who are behind that.
The virus that spreads COVID-19 is new to humanity, and this possibility of a pandemic has been anticipated for many years.
We know that a majority of people who get sick will experience mild to moderate symptoms. So as a country, our priority must be to protect the people who are most vulnerable, older people, people with underlying health conditions, and our healthcare workers themselves. We need them to stay healthy.
That means getting as much gear and medical supplies to the state's hospitals. PPE stands for Personal Protective Equipment. For yet another day, Northam pleaded with Virginians to limit contact with other people to help keep the curve flattened.
Every one of us has a job to do to fight this virus. That is why it is so, so critical that everyone stay home as much as possible. Do not go into crowds. Do not have gatherings. I know that most Virginians are hearing this message, and I thank you all for doing your part. But I also know that some people are not listening. And I want you to know You are putting every single one of us in Virginia at risk.
The grounds at Buford Middle School are eerily quiet for a Tuesday. Students, including my 8th grade daughter, won't be coming back here for the rest of the school year. But the bell still rings. The enormity of the impact of this COVID-19 emergency seems to grow each day as the number of cases in our area continues to rise, as has been predicted by epidemiologists and state officials. There are 290 cases confirmed in the state officially by the Virginia Department of Health, but we know that the virus is out there. It's been 13 days now since Albemarle and Charlottesville both declared local declarations of emergency to prepare for the COVID-19 outbreak. That's led to the physical closing of schools, but local government is starting to come back to life.
And we have made adjustments as quickly as we can and responsibly as we can to adjust our work.
I look forward for other opportunities to communicate with our community about what we're doing.
I'm Sean Tubbs, and on today's 10th installment of this podcast about Charlottesville's response to the COVID-19 crisis, we hear from local officials throughout the area about how they're responding. And we drop in on some examples of how city and county officials are trying to stay connected with citizens. We'll also get a brief update from Governor Northam and hear a little about how the local food hub is stepping up to make sure output from local farmers is still available to people throughout the crisis.
With school and business closures, children, the elderly, and others are dependent on emergency feeding efforts, which largely consist of highly processed and shelf-stable options, despite the fact that fresh food is critical to the health of our vulnerable communities.
It's March 25th, and another day waiting to see how much social distancing has helped reduce the spread of COVID-19, a virus that can be spread by a carrier even before symptoms present themselves. Concern over the possibility of our hospitals being overwhelmed has led to drastic measures. As at midnight, Governor Ralph Northam's Executive Order 53 came into effect, further restricting commercial activity as a way of limiting human contact. Here is Northam from his briefing yesterday, March 24th.
Every decision we make is based on science and data. And as your governor, I take full responsibility. The feedback I'm hearing from Virginians is supportive. You understand that while these changes are difficult, they are necessary. You understand that we are fighting a biological war, and to have economic recovery, we must get through this health crisis first.
Northam stated several times that he understands the emotional toll this decision has had on Virginians. The news that the academic year is over has devastated many people.
We have students who miss their classmates and teachers, teachers who miss their students, and high school seniors who are facing their last semester of school with no prom, no graduation ceremony, none of the rites of passage that should mark these big changes.
Northam said all parts of our society have already changed in response to what will be a months-long fight against the coronavirus. That's also the case for local government, which has so far seen a temporary suspension of public meetings. That's beginning to change, and we'll get there in a minute. But on Friday, Albemarle County put out a video to stay in touch with citizens.
Albemarle County is working tirelessly to balance essential services with community safety with respect to COVID-19.
That's Jeffrey Richardson, the county executive and emergency management director for Albemarle. The county declared a state of emergency on March 12th. That was 13 days ago, almost 2 weeks ago. Here's Deputy County Executive Doug Walker.
Business is not usual. I think that's pretty clear. And we have made adjustments as quickly as we can and responsibly as we can to adjust our work in order to, again, to both maintain the critical services that our public relies upon from local government in order to meet daily needs, as well as to adjust to the needs being kind of caused or affected or put on us by the emergency.
We have heard from Charlottesville Mayor Nakia Walker on this program, but so far we have not heard from her equivalent in Albemarle County. Ned Galloway is the chair of the Board of Supervisors, and here he is speaking on Friday, March 20th.
Well, I'm really impressed with our leadership team here in the county and all of our staff for that matter. Everybody has been even keeled. They've been remaining calm, but they understand the seriousness of the threat and what's going on, but they're all ahead of it. We have all of these sorts of plans and procedures in place for any sort of crisis to come up, and this is no different.
The job of figuring out how to come up with a plan to allow for public comment at Albemarle's meetings is up to Emily Kilroy, Albemarle's Director of Communications and Public Engagement.
Thanks for tuning in with us today. We hope you continue to have patience with us as we work through what is really uncharted territory. We don't know what COVID-19 means for our organization and for our community, but we want you to know that we're working really hard day and night throughout the entirety of this situation to ensure that we're maintaining our essential services and keeping our community safe.
Until yesterday, Albemarle had not scheduled its next meeting, in part because they were not sure if they could. They got some clarity on Friday, March 20th, when Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring issued an opinion about local government functions during an emergency. Governor Northam addressed this during his briefing on Saturday.
General Herring's opinion makes clear public bodies should ask themselves, is the action we're taking truly essential? If not, they should defer it until they meet in person again. We're not throwing out public accountability and transparency measures because there is an emergency. Bad policies can happen that way. The regular features of public meetings remain critical, including the need for public access, proper public notice, publicly available agendas, roll call votes, and recorded minutes.
Good evening and welcome to the Greene County Board of Supervisors meeting of Tuesday, March 24th.
That's Bill Martin, the chair of the Greene County Board of Supervisors, which met for the first time last night since the emergency. Five members and six staff members spaced themselves carefully in the meeting room in order to maintain distance.
Before we do matters from the public this evening, this is a little bit of an extraordinary session this evening. Extraordinary circumstances create a need to do things a little bit differently. We are in an unprecedented situation here in Greene County. Like so many communities around us and in the Commonwealth of Virginia and across the country, we're forced to adjust and adapt to multiple changes in protocol on a daily basis. And we're going to try and do that here in Greene County as well.
Martin said he is impressed so far by how he has seen Greene County residents respond. He encouraged people to stay in touch with each other from a safe distance.
We've still got phones. We've still got the internet. And we can still go next door and talk across fence lines or whatever, as long as we're maintaining a safe distance. But let's reach out to our community and stay in touch with everyone.
Staying in touch with everyone is what local governments are trying to do as well.
What are the current objectives of the city's leadership when it comes to this incident?
Right. So we've got four primary objectives. One is to sustain essential operations of local government.
That's Charlottesville Fire Chief Andrew Baxter being interviewed by Brian Wheeler, the city's communications director. This was part of a pilot for an online information program that Wheeler and his team have put together to help inform the public at this time. Charlottesville City Council held a meeting on March 16th that I documented in the second episode of this podcast. Since then, the ability to use the technology has increased as more people become comfortable with it. This kind of programming by local governments is more important now than ever. Most of us don't have the opportunity to hear from city officials up close, especially now that we're so far apart from each other. But we need to hear Chief Baxter and other officials explain very clearly that to get through this, we're going to all think about how we're part of a system and how we can contribute. That system includes public safety employees who are likely going to be infected first.
Our workforce is going to be key to getting us up and back and running again when we get to that recovery phase, whenever that happens. The next thing is we're very cognizant of the need to identify and protect and support the most vulnerable in our community. So our homeless population, people that are housing unstable, people with chronic medical conditions, people with addictions, people that are at higher risk for complications from COVID and other infectious diseases, people that are over 60, people that are immunocompromised, pre-existing conditions.
Baxter said the whole public health strategy of social distancing is paramount to avoid the number of deaths that might happen when the healthcare system becomes overwhelmed or closer to capacity. It is important to stay home to flatten the curve.
The reasoning behind that is that the system itself, hospitals, hospital beds, ICUs, ventilators, staff that can manage patients that are that sick, has limitations. There's a cap. So if we can extend out the total number of cases and the total number of infections over a longer period of time, that will give the healthcare system the ability to adapt, to flex a little bit, to be able to provide the appropriate level of care for people who come down with the COVID disease.
I can't stress enough how much the public needs information at this time. Local government can provide, and we're seeing examples of that now. Listen to this 3-minute exchange between Wheeler and Baxter about testing. These are the things that so many people want to hear.
And as we mentioned, the number of test positive cases over the past week has gone from 1 to now about 16. Mm-hmm. Again, today's March 24th. This is a number that's going to change, and we expect it to grow as more people are tested.
We do, and it's very clear given the limitations of testing that the rate of diagnosis is behind, and that will also at some point when we have a clear understanding of what that denominator is, how many people test positive in the community, will change the statistics in terms of morbidity and mortality. But at this point, we're the preventive measures that we're taking, the mitigation measures that we're taking, would be what we would do in any circumstance at this point in the development of the disease curve.
And then I know the grassroots efforts by mm-hmm. community members have been pretty impressive as well. What have you seen on that front?
Yeah, so some wonderful people in the community set up a website called supportseville.com. Within the last week or 10 days, one of the primary issues that the community has understood now for certainly the last week is the challenges that we face with personal protective equipment. And that's true in the hospital. That's true for us as first responders, police, fire, EMS. But there's a particular part of the medical community of the healthcare system that was really not addressed in terms of PPE, and that was unaffiliated medical providers. So doctors, nurse practitioners, other providers out in the community that weren't necessarily tied to a major practice or to one of the large health systems. So a series of phone calls and Twitter messages and really almost entirely community effort, they were able to stand up within the framework of that Support Seville website, an element called Equip Seville. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to simply connect people that have PPE with people that need it. So clinicians, providers, medical providers that have a need for personal protective equipment go to that site and they fill out a form that identifies, you know, who they are, what their level of practice is, where their practice is. And then people in the community that have PPE say, I want to donate. And then those are connected together sort of on the back end. One of the really fascinating things that people are figuring out now is that there are a lot of people in the community that aren't medical professionals that have PPE. So painters and people that do drywall and welders and tattoo parlors that have surgical masks or medical gloves that are stepping up and saying, I don't need these right now. You guys need this more than I do. So every time a community member or a community group solves the problem on their own within the framework of a disaster setting, it keeps that scarce resource that we have, that fire engine, that medic unit, that ambulance, that nurse, from having to deploy into that environment. Mm-hmm. So we are very, very excited when we see that type of organic community solution.
It's the morning of March 31st as I record this. Yesterday, the number of COVID-19 cases rose to over 1,000, and the number of hospitalizations rose to 136. As of March 31st, the health district reported 61 COVID-19 cases. As I record this, the latest information from the Virginia Department of Health has come in, and the number of COVID-19 cases in Virginia continues to rise, with 1,484 confirmed cases and 34 reported deaths. There were over 50 more hospitalizations over the last period, for a cumulative total of 208. The number of cases is up from 1,250 the day before. Every day, the numbers count up. The whole point of staying at home at the moment is to limit the potential of spreading COVID-19. Here's a reminder of why we're doing this from Charlottesville Police Chief Andrew Baxter. He was a guest on the March 31st edition of the Seville 360 show with Brian Wheeler.
I'm sure people are familiar with this term now and always will be, but is to flatten that curve. So what we're doing fits into the bigger regional picture and ultimately fits into the bigger national picture, too.
On Monday, Governor Ralph Northam issued Executive Order 55, which is a temporary stay-at-home order to restrict movement and human contact. Baxter said city public safety officials had been concerned about people congregating in parks in the weeks immediately after the local declaration of emergency on March 12th. Even now, there is still concern that there are people who are not following protocol and staying sufficiently far apart.
While we encourage people to get outside and exercise and get fresh air, and that's an important stress reliever, I think, for all of us. But what we were seeing was people congregating in groups larger than 10 and that were not maintaining that appropriate level of social distancing. We had some challenges at the skate park as well. And I think I don't think there's anybody in a leadership position in the city that didn't understand and empathize with people's desire to connect and to be social. We're social beings. But the prism through which we are looking at every issue now is through a public health and public safety prism.
And it's amazing how fast that has all occurred. Before all of this began, I had not really paid much attention to the work of the Thomas Jefferson Health District. Communications Director Catherine Goodman explains what the agency is.
We cover Charlottesville and also the surrounding five counties, so Albemarle, Flavanna, Louisa, and Nelson and Green. And our big role here is to help with all of the pandemic response efforts. So we're underneath the Virginia Department of Health, and we are doing the contact investigations for any positive cases. We are monitoring the status of where our case numbers currently stand and providing the resources needed for emergency personnel to be able to help with these responses.
In addition to tracking the confirmed cases of COVID-19, the Thomas Jefferson Health District also reports the number of clinically diagnosed cases. That helps us better understand local trends. This helps us better understand local trends.
So these are individuals that are really close contacts with someone who was lab positive. Most of those would be, for example, a spouse, someone who is showing symptoms, but we aren't testing them because they live so closely with someone who was tested positive.
Chief Baxter said the city is trying to find more supplies of personal protective equipment, PPE, for first responders and for city employees who are cleaning spaces where public employees are still working.
And we need to make sure that they have the proper guidance in terms of PPE and decontamination and cleaning procedures and decontamination procedures. And we're following CDC guidance there.
This week, it was reported that two senior living facilities are believed to have residents who have contracted COVID-19. Baxter said Charlottesville is learning how to prepare from following what other parts of the state are doing.
People may be aware of some challenges that they've had and some difficult situations that have occurred in the Metro Richmond area. We're on a conference call with our colleagues from that part of the state once a week so we can learn what strategies worked for them and what didn't, and we're trying to adjust our response and support those facilities in any way that we can, because as people would understand, that's a very, very high risk group, and an outbreak in a facility like that could easily overwhelm the EMS system and have a significant impact on the healthcare system more broadly.
Check one, check two, check three. All right, let's do this. And welcome back to April 5th, 2020. This concludes the hour-long recap of the COVID-19 in Charlottesville podcast so far. Please keep listening. We'll have updated information and information that you need to know as much as possible. And please keep listening to this station as well. There are people working really hard to make sure you can still continue to hear the signal. I'm Sean Tubbs, and thanks for listening.